Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Let's begin today with a little bit of a thought exercise. And I invited the folks who help us out on the show each and every day, great producers, Cody Chaffins, Jay Black, two guys that have covered Georgia football for a long time and been around the program for a long time. I asked them before the show, I said, this is not a trick question. This is not something that I'm trying to get an abstract answer from you on. Think about your lifetime of being around the program, of watching and covering Georgia football. What are the biggest moments in this program's history? And the answers they gave, for the most part, I'm guessing, are the same ones that you would give, the same ones that I would give. My, you know, most vivid memories of Georgia football, you know, the Kelee Ringo interception in Indianapolis, the national championship game against Alabama, traveling to South Bend for Notre Dame in 2017 and all the Georgia fans who came there, the Sony Michel game-winning touchdown in the Rose Bowl, also at the end of that 2017 season. You know, a little bit before I'm able to remember, but I was alive for it, Buck Ballew to Lindsey Scott in Jacksonville, 1980, in what turned out to be a national championship season for Georgia. The Hobnail Boot Game, one of the first, like, really big Georgia wins in my lifetime that I was lucky enough to be in attendance for, an incredible feat. The following year, the Michael Johnson touchdown catch at Auburn, which preserved and granted Georgia its first ever SEC East win. You go to Atlanta a couple of weeks later, you know, block punt near the beginning of the game. Georgia goes on to win 30-3, and they kind of break a 20-year drought of SEC championships. And those are some of the things that are kind of coming up in that overall discussion. And if you really think about that, your list, perhaps, you know, similar to these, you could have mentioned the Midnight Miracle against Ohio State back in the Peach Bowl two seasons ago. But, you know, the discussion of, like, the most vivid memories in our life as a Georgia fan, I would say there's sort of a weird commonality in most of those events. It's the fact that they did not take place in Athens. And that's not a good thing or a bad thing. If anything, it's just sort of a coincidence. It's just a sort of a weird thing that on the list of, like, biggest moments in Georgia program history, a lot of these things have occurred somewhere other than Athens. That's why within the Kirby Smart era, a couple of things, like certainly when Notre Dame came here in 2019 and the incredible atmosphere for the night game and the first time the LED lights were kind of turned on, it's such a huge deal. Or the Tennessee game in 2022, which, to me, of the national championship era, those back-to-back national championship seasons, that game against Tennessee is one of my most vivid memories of that entire, like, 24-month span and, you know, 30 straight games of wins. That game against Tennessee is one of my most vivid memories because of how raucous the crowd was there at Sanford Stadium. It's one of the rare examples of a very big thing for Georgia football that happened to take place in Athens. As I said before, this is nobody's fault. This is not a thing to criticize or anything like that. It's just sort of a weird coincidence that Georgia, who's got as robust a history as any program, I would say more than you would expect to be true of those major events have taken place, you know, somewhere other than between the hedges and Sanford Stadium. That's why, to me, it was such a big deal yesterday when the 2025 schedule was announced for the SEC that for Georgia, the immediate reaction, I think rightly so, is, oh my gosh, this may be the best home schedule that Georgia's ever played. In fact, let me show you this on the screen here for those of you watching on video. All you're doing is basically re-racking the same schedule from 2024, but flipping the locations. That means Georgia will travel to Auburn, Mississippi State, Tennessee. First of all, you like that because none of those road trips are very far away, other than obviously UCLA, which to begin the season. But of the SEC games, all relatively close. You'd say all, you know, certainly winnable based on, you know, recent history. So you don't hate the away slate. But when you look at the home games, Georgia will host Alabama for the first time since 2015. Georgia will host Texas for the first time ever. Ole Miss comes back to town there as well. But the headline here is both Texas and Alabama coming to Georgia, coming to Sanford Stadium. And I'm thrilled about that. I'm excited about that, that Georgia fans between the hedges get a chance to see games of that magnitude. And I do like the intensity of what the stadium, I think, it would expect to be that day. And for the fans who, you know, just the clamoring for all of that for throughout the offseason, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think when you look at the 2025 schedule release yesterday, I think it really was very good news for Georgia. Even if it's kind of stale to say, well, you're playing the exact same opponents, we'll get more into that in a moment. In terms of the return date from the two big road games you have this year, going to Bama, going to Austin, having both them coming to you in 2025, I think that's a really cool thing. And I'll also add this real quick before we look at the other part of this. We can bring the schedule down. I think this could be the start of a little bit of a trend moving forward in college football where, you know, I mentioned to start the show that for the most part, you know, the big things for Georgia have taken place away from Sanford Stadium. And some of that's because, obviously, you play championship games other places. You know, playoff games are played neutral site, and, you know, that's just the way things have been. But when you look at the playoff expanding and you look at the clamoring that seems to exist for, like, say, in the 12-team playoff, which we're going to have for the next 2 years, seeds 5, 6, 7, and 8 getting a chance to host a playoff game, there seems to be a lot of excitement about that. And I would say that in future playoff models, and we're almost certainly getting more change coming in the future, you've got to imagine, I think making more room for more teams hosting playoff games in their own stadium, a little bit like more what the NFL does on a regular basis, I think there could be more of that in college football there as well. So, and the bottom line from the Georgia part of this is the 2025 schedule, I think, is really good for the Georgia fan who wants the big moment, the home games, perhaps replicating what Notre Dame was like in 2019, what Tennessee was like in 2022. And it could start a little bit of a trend where moving forward in the future, the biggest games, perhaps even playoff games for Georgia, they're taking place right there in your home state. And that could be sort of a fun thing. Now, while I say that this is, I believe, all good news for Georgia, I think the flip side of this is, I think some of this is probably problematic for the SEC. Because when the schedule is announced, and yesterday it was, you can read this at dognation.com, it's essentially a flip-flopping of the dates for the 2024, the basic same opponents, staying in an 8-game slate and just sort of running it back, sort of one more sort of one-off schedule. Now, why is this? Well, Greg Sankey, I'll show you the quote here from DogNation.com, Sankey talking about why the schedule kind of comes out the way that it does. He says, we continue to monitor changes across college sports as they relate to future scheduling. Continuing with our current format for the 2025 season provides additional time to understand the impact of the changes happening around us as we determine the appropriate long-term plan for SEC football scheduling. That is, to me, a very fancy way of saying that they don't have agreement. They don't know what they want to do yet. They don't have agreement on whether they should go to an 8-game schedule or a 9-game schedule. And they're sort of using the excuse of, well, the 14-team playoffs on the way, and we'll get more in later on, but the idea there could be more conference realignment on the way. But all of that, I believe, is kind of being used as an excuse for the fact that of the 16 teams currently in the league, there just isn't enough agreement about the future scheduling model to put something permanent in place right now. Now, I'll tell you, that speaks to something pretty problematic in my eyes. That sort of speaks to an issue in which the SEC seems to have two pretty valuable assets right now, Texas and Oklahoma, in this league. But it seems like the SEC, led by Greg Sankey here, is perhaps not exactly sure how best to use those two new assets. And I can't help, in the midst of thinking about all of this, you know, kind of go back to when Texas and Oklahoma first came into the league. There was something Greg Sankey said at the time that, you know, didn't really stick out to me too much then, but it kind of means something a little bit different to me now in light of the criticism the league took for bringing these programs in and, you know, the notion that Greg Sankey was trying to sabotage the Big 12 or something along those lines. Sankey's explanation that he gave at the time, I think, takes on new meaning now that we're, you know, kind of moving into sort of the next phase of their life in this particular league. Let me let you hear this from a couple of years ago, and I'm going to tell you why I believe that matters here right now. This is Greg Sankey on adding Texas and Oklahoma into the SEC.
Reached out to us, and things accelerated in the middle of media days with the Houston Chronicle report, and it was a pretty busy 10 days, but I'm excited about our future. But pretty clearly, that was the two universities reaching out. So, you know, in the CFP discussion, just to extend it, you know, ESPN has done this. No, that's not accurate. This is two universities who were making decisions about their future and chose to reach out to the Southeastern Conference, and the result result is a membership transition that's contemplated July 1st, 2025, around their completion of contractual commitments to their current league.
So Greg Sankey has a way of making everything sound as boring as it possibly can, but the thing that matters about what Sankey says there is Texas and Oklahoma came to us. We didn't reach out to them. They came to us. And that was sort of his way of defending himself against criticism at the time. But that statement, I believe, takes on an entirely different and new meaning now, because certainly what it speaks to is the opportunity to bring Texas and Oklahoma into the league was taken without fully considering the best way to get maximum value out of their presence. And I think you see that playing out here right now. I don't believe that the SEC handled its negotiation for a new television contract very well with ESPN. They essentially got prorated value by adding Texas and Oklahoma into the league, but they didn't get additional value for essentially the two biggest brands in the Big 12 now being absorbed by the SEC. And they can't get, seemingly, ESPN to sort of pony up extra money for going from an 8-game conference schedule to a 9-game conference schedule. And I think the SEC's right to be somewhat resistant to that change until they can get ESPN to pony up. But ESPN doesn't really have any true incentive to give the SEC more money. They would essentially just be negotiating against themselves in that situation, which means the point that I made a moment ago, that you can certainly make the case that perhaps the SEC did not handle that negotiation with ESPN as well as it did. Because now you've got a lot of teams in this league wanting to stay in an 8-game conference schedule, not wanting to go to 9 because they're not getting any extra money for doing so. And if you're a Kentucky or a Vanderbilt or a Mississippi State or somebody like that, the additional conference game makes that much more difficult for you to get a chance to play in a bowl game. So all of a sudden now, the SEC has taken on something new. Texas and Oklahoma gained very little for it, as Greg Sankey also alluded to in that particular clip. You know, college football could have gone to a 12-team playoff sooner, something that Sankey said that he wanted, but the rest of college football kind of colluded against the SEC to keep that from happening as punishment for taking on Texas and Oklahoma. So essentially, the SEC's position has been somewhat weakened by bringing in Texas and Oklahoma. They haven't gotten any extra money for it, and now if you can't move to a 9-game conference slate, you run the risk of losing traditional rivalries, games that need to be played. In the case of Georgia, that may mean Georgia-Auburn. In the case of the league at large, that's like Tennessee-Alabama, or Texas-Texas A&M, or Ole Miss-LSU, a lot of these historic rivalries that are kind of the secondary rivalry for certain teams. In an 8-game conference slate world, they can't be played each and every year. And the other point that you'll make here is, it's also a little bit of an example of, when the SEC was 10 teams all located in the Southeast, it was very easy to get unanimous agreement on almost any issue because these were teams that were geographically very close. They were philosophically very close. Alignment was easy because the league was much more geographically aligned. Well, now the league sort of stretches from Atlanta all the way to Dallas and in some cases, I guess, beyond that. All of a sudden now you've got very different interests. You've got these wildly different factions, which is just a matter of fact, sort of after effect as leagues like this get bigger and bigger and bigger. And Greg Sankey can say, hey, these are contiguous states. They all touch each other, but ultimately that doesn't matter very much. There are large portions of this league that don't have very much to do with each other, and their concerns for the future aren't very similar to each other. And so the notion that the league can't get agreement on stuff like this moving forward about what the exact permanent scheduling model should be, this may be kind of foreshadowing of a lot more of the decisions to be made in the future, because the league now at 16 teams just has a lot of different groupings of schools that are a lot different than they used to be. So the bottom line on all of this is this. If you're Georgia, when you see that schedule come out for yesterday of what it's going to look like in 2025, I think you ought to be really happy about that. That's good news for you. You've got the biggest and best home slate you've ever played. That's really, really exciting, and Georgia fans should be happy. But as you look at the future and the health of the SEC, the fact that they can't get agreement on what their permanent scheduling model should be, the fact that they're forced to sort of kick the can down the road on this for another year, the fact that they're not able to extract any extra money from ESPN, sort of speaks to a little bit of a stalled level of leadership right now and a little bit of an uncertain future that is totally of the league's own making. Troubling times, I believe, for the leadership in the SEC. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. We're happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m. across all video platforms, radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep, podcasts wherever you find them, including the worldfamousdognation.com. We are just so happy to have you as a part of the program and so thankful for our friends at Meriwether and Tharp who make it all possible. And listen, one of the things I love about my audience is that throughout the years, so many of you are so kind to let us know about the events happening in your life. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not, right? It's like you have the joy of a child being born, or, you know, some of you have been reaching out recently. Hey, my son just got into UGA, daughter just got into UGA, and we're celebrating that good news. On the other side, we've also been here to, you know, kind of share grief with you when you've lost someone that you loved or something like that. That life away from college football and the topic that we address on a regular basis, Georgia football, you know, has plenty of ups and downs and everything sort of in between. And many of you over the years have been kind enough to sort of make us a part of your life in all of that. And in the midst of all of that sort of real world stuff that sometimes goes on, the divorce process exists there as well. And I take that very seriously. It's something, not something that I say lightly, but it is a reality for, you know, statistics would say a sizable portion of our audience. And if that's the situation that you find yourself in, I am deeply sorry for you. And while I can't make this disappear and go away, I can, I think, do the next best thing for you, which is to get you in touch with an organization that I think can be a strong advocate for you while you go through this. It's my friends at Meriwether and Tharp, and truly they are my friends. Bob, Ashley, I've known them for a long time, and I like them, and I know how much they care for their clients. Bob cares for his clients and how hard he and his team there work to take care of people who find themselves in challenging situations. I want you to find them online. It's GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. That's GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. Now, that's a little bit of a new website we've been sharing with you the last, couple of months or so, because Meriwether and Tharp has now taken the same level of service they're famous for in the Atlanta area, and they're really extending that across the entire state. I'm talking about office in Peachtree City and Savannah and now Athens. They're really trying to reach out and be able to provide the same level of care, the same level of support, the same level of advocacy for you, no matter where you are, even if you're outside the Atlanta area. So please find them online. That is GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. Meriwether and Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. Make sure you check them out today. Good to have them as a part of Dog Nation Daily all the time. All right. We are going to talk to Terrence Edwards here in just a moment. In fact, I just told our friends Cody and Jay, just heard from Terrence a moment ago. He's going to try to connect with y'all. So we'll get all that squared away here. But prior to that, I do want to go around the doghouse just for a moment. And one of the things that's interesting about Georgia football from year to year is the new slogan that comes out every year. And some people probably think this is corny. I always really like this kind of stuff. That's probably because I'm a little bit of a corny guy. Sometimes I think y'all probably realize that. But this year, the new motto for Georgia football, in keeping with what they've kind of done in the past, the new motto is assume nothing. That's the new motto. And as Kirby Smart explains, it's his travels with the chairman of the Nike organization, Phil Knight, that were kind of the foundation for where this new motto came from. Let me let you hear Kirby Smart going back to Tuesday talking about how it is that the team arrived at assume nothing as the motto here for this year. This is what Kirby Smart had to say about that.
I didn't choose it myself. I had some help, and we get outside support with that, so I'm not taking credit for that. I think I have a close relationship with Nike and Phil Knight and been on a trip with him for six or seven consecutive years and have so much respect for him and his wife and what he's done with his business that I thought was really cool when the opportunity came up to study their success. You know, you want to be successful, study successful people, and they have certainly been that.
There's something I kind of like as a Georgia fan about the fact that Kirby Smart can be comfortable sitting and traveling with Nike chairman Phil Knight, one of the richest men in the world, that Kirby Smart can be comfortable in that environment and also sort of be comfortable in other environments there as well. Kirby's the kind of guy that's just sort of comfortable with both kings and peasants. You know, he's just like the kind of guy that in any room that he's in, he's sort of able to be comfortable in his own skin, no matter what that is. And that's kind of what you want from a coach, I think. You know, Kirby is a football coach. But the old stereotype of what maybe old football coaches used to be, and it was probably even wrong for them too, but the old idea of like sort of the meathead football coach, Kirby Smart's no meathead, but he's also no like egghead either. You know, this is a guy that just seems to be able to be around smart, successful people and have a pretty good idea of how to extract the things that make them successful and figure out how that applies to the world that he lives in football there too, is that it's been said before that, that Kirby sort of approaches leadership with the kind of attitude that would allow him, I believe, to be successful leading other organizations besides football teams there as well. And his comfort around someone like Phil Knight, I think, speaks to that being true. And the other thing about, you know, Kirby that you can't help but notice is the way in which he's able to clearly communicate a message like this to his players there as well, because when they talk about these things, they talk about them just as comfortably as Kirby does, which obviously lets you know that Kirby has delivered his own communication on this in a very powerful way. And in fact, this week, just like Kirby Smart sort of talks about getting this from Phil Knight, what they're learning from Nike, the same way they've sort of studied, you know, other successful organizations in the past, someone like Chas Chambliss, who's been around Georgia for a good while now, and I would say one of the key leaders on this defense, and someone who's been, I think, a strong contributor to Georgia's locker room culture for a long time, you know, he's also able to sort of speak from his own perspective on this, that something that meant something to Kirby now means something to a guy like Chas, because of how well the Georgia coaches have communicated that message. And I thought that Chas Chambliss also had some pretty interesting things to say about it.
Going into the season, not thinking about what happened in the past, nothing about what happened in the SEC last year. Everybody's saying, you know, this team can get three or whatever. It's not about the past. Right now we're just assuming that nothing is given to us, which we know everybody, we get everybody's best, you know, and just taking every single detail that you have and can take advantage of, not assuming that the person beside you knows what they're doing and holding them accountable too.
If you're watching on video, you obviously see Chas Chambliss. You know, there's been some talk about Chas potentially being like an MMA competitor at some point in time in his life when his football career is done. Just the look that Chas gives you in a press conference situation like that, I think would lead you to believe that he's got a very good chance of being very successful in some sort of fighting endeavor. Fighting Chas Chambliss does not seem like it'd be a very fun thing to do. So also good stuff from Chas, sort of expressing what that mantra of, you know, assume nothing, what that means to him. And as effective as Chas is at speaking about that, gosh, Jalen Walker also incredibly strong. And, you know, Jalen's a guy that I've been impressed with in terms of his ability to communicate and just his ability to sort of, you know, really, you know, share very interesting thoughts. Going back to his time, even as like a high school player, he's obviously, I believe, going to be one of Georgia's top spokesmen moving forward. And he also had some incredibly insightful things to say about what the notion of assume nothing as a motto means for him and his Georgia teammates here this season. Jalen Walker also here this week.
Assuming things, you know, doesn't, you know, create the best outcomes for everybody. You know, for us studying Nike, we're focusing on their longevity of being a great company. And, you know, here at the University of Georgia, we're focused on our longevity of being a successful football program. So watching them and learning what they did and watching what they did over the years, you know, is just a model that we can follow. You know, this is a great model that we can follow because, you know, half the world wears Nike. And you might not know, but you have Nike in your closet every single day. So having that longevity of keeping a successful program is simply what I have for our outcome.
So a quick, simple, final point for me on this is that the stuff that you're hearing Chas say and the stuff that you're hearing Jalen say, and they're both so good at talking about that, to me, this is some of the best that college football has to offer. And I think it's good for Georgia as a team because mindsets like that I really do think contribute to Georgia's success. But I think it also demonstrates why college football is such a powerful force in the lives of the young men who get a chance to play it. I've always said before that college football makes men. It's one of the reasons why I think that college football and the college football system needs to be defended, because I think it does something really positive for the young men who get a chance to be a part of it. They are made better through that process. And Jalen's words, I think, demonstrate that. Chas Chambliss's words, I think, demonstrate that too. Kirby Smart's commitment to the ideals that make that true, I think that demonstrates that there as well. So I love the skull sessions, and I love the kind of more, I guess, cerebral side of Georgia football, because I do believe it's contributed to Georgia's winning. But I also believe it sets up the Georgia players to be successful in life as well, to be winners in life as well. That's one of the reasons why I want to see college football sort of remain the entity that it's been for my entire lifetime, because I see what it does for the young men who get a chance to play it. Really good stuff there. And that is around the doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp here today. Now, another guy who went through the process of college football and became a great man because of it is our good friend Terrence Edwards. We're going to talk to Terrence here right now, getting to everything going on with Georgia spring practice, including one of the guys that's out there generating a lot of buzz here right now. We'll find out if Terrence got some thoughts on that. We'll get to all that here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let's say hello to Terrence Edwards. Always appreciate his time on the program. And we just talked about Kirby Smart and his leadership, what he brings to the table. Of course, Terrence is a coach, a newly minted head coach here in the Georgia high school world, understands all of that there as well. So the new motto for Georgia football here this year, Terrence, is assume nothing, coming from Kirby's travels with Nike and Phil Knight, the chairman. And you heard Jalen Walker there a moment ago, kind of, I think, very strongly articulate about, you know, why something like that has relevance there for Georgia. You like that as a motto? You like Nike as a little bit of a blueprint for Georgia to study?
Yes, I was at the Macon Textile Club banquet on Monday, and Kirby, spoke about that as well. So I really appreciate that mantra, because as a player, you can never assume. As a receiver, just take it to the football standpoint. You can never assume what coverage is going to be. The quarterbacks can never assume. Once you assume and put something in your head, that's when mistakes happen. So you have to go out there each and every play and don't assume. Go by your studies. Go by your preparation. So I love the mantra, assume nothing.
Yeah, and it's also an example, too, of like, no matter how easy some things seem to be to predict, the truth is the future is really, really hard to predict. You know, for instance, Texas A&M a couple of years ago has the number one recruiting class. That sort of seemed like, oh, man, they've arrived. They're going to be a player on the scene now. And the truth is they haven't won anything since then. You know, Alabama wins a national championship in 2020. You'd have assumed they'd have been a major factor in national championships moving forward. But the truth is that was Nick Saban's last. You know, sometimes there are these predictions that get made or these assumptions that we make about who's going to be what. And we find out that the actual future is a lot more difficult to predict. And I don't mean to be like fatalistic as it relates to Georgia, but there is this assumption sometimes that, oh, well, because Georgia's won two national championships over the course of the last three seasons, because they're the preseason number one team right now, it's just going to be easy to go out there and run through whatever's in front of them there in 2024. But assuming that would be, you know, potentially risky, because college football sometimes has a way of surprising you. And if you're not careful, it can surprise you in a negative way if you're not on the lookout.
Oh, most definitely. I think Kirby coaches and teaches that every day with his players and coaches, that because of the success that we have had in the past, that doesn't dictate what our future is going to be. So we have to go out each and every day and work your tail off to continue to stay at the top of college football. So that's one of the things that he did speak about as well, is how hard it is to sustain being at the top. So they're not going to assume anything because we are the Georgia Bulldogs. They're going to go out and work and work and work to try to continue to stay at the top, because you never know what tomorrow is going to bring.
You mentioned the Macon Touchdown Club a moment ago. You were there. C.J. Wiley, one of your proteges, honored there that night. And I know that there was a video on the internet that got taken down. So I guess, people have been kind of curious about everything that went down there. I know Kirby had some jokes. What else did you sort of observe of a little bit of a different kind of Kirby speaking to a booster club environment, more so than like the sort of traditional press conference stuff we might typically get?
Yes, I thought it was a very good. That's my first time being there. Yes, I was there with C.J. Wiley, who deserved to be there, who I think is one of the best receivers in the state of Georgia, in the whole country. So he is a prize. So I enjoyed it. That was my first time being there. I saw some Washington County people there. Miss Jen, you saw a lot of talented recruits being there. Ethan Barber's been was there. Bo Walker was there. Juju was there. So you got to see a lot of talented players from the state of Georgia. And Kirby did a great job speaking to the crowd.
No, that's great to hear. We also talked a moment ago before you joined us about the 2025 schedule release that comes out for Georgia and the rest of the SEC. And from a Georgia standpoint, I think this is really exciting to think about Alabama and Texas, two road trips that Georgia has to take this season, coming to Athens for 2025, I think on paper. Now, a lot of this is difficult to predict, but on paper, I think this is the best home schedule that Georgia's probably ever played. And, you know, we just haven't had Alabama coming in here very frequently. It was 2015. Before that, I believe it was 2008. Before that, I think it was 2003. So you're talking about, like, three trips to Athens this century so far for Alabama. So no matter how good they are in 2025, it's still a pretty big deal to have the Crimson Tide here. And then Texas will be making its first trip to Athens ever. You know, you can say what you want to about the league's inability to kind of come up with a permanent scheduling model and fulfill the promise that it originally made about rotational games and things like that. But from a Georgia standpoint, I don't think you can ask much more, you know, to have big games between the hedges. And in 2025, that's what Georgia's going to have.
Yes, and Kirby spoke about the scheduling and about the opponents that we're going to play in 24. Didn't talk about 25 because it wasn't out yet. But if you just see the opponents that we're going to play in, one thing that he really, really emphasized is how tough the schedule is, that we have to play Texas next year. We have to play Oklahoma. We have to play Alabama. And one thing that he really emphasized, guys, if you schedule that schedule, don't come to Georgia, because that's why you come to Georgia, to play these type of games. And if you're scheduling these type games, Georgia is not the place for you. So he really emphasized that it really doesn't matter who's on the schedule, because if you come to a school like Georgia, you should expect to play the top talented teams and go in there and compete. So I love it. I love the schedule that has a lot more SEC games. Now, being the rotation of how it is, we get Alabama back-to-back this year. I think we get Texas back-to-back. But I just think the Auburns and the Florida, we should never lose those games.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting point. I love Kirby's mindset about that. And Terrence, as a fan, what that kind of means for me, too, is that, look, you know, ultimately, it's the big games that matter to me more than anything else. Like, my own personal trophy case is my memories. I don't get a championship ring. I don't have a trophy. You know, the program and the players get that. What I get are memories. And the things that I have memories of are the big games. And I love it when Georgia wins the national championships. But ultimately, what the national championship means for me, it's the big games I got to see Georgia win along the way to that. So, you know, the idea that Georgia's going to be playing in big games, I think it's fun. Frankly, if you're Georgia, I don't think you should want it to be easy, because the harder it is, the more likely it is the best team is going to emerge. And it's also just a lot more entertaining to be playing interesting football games as well. So a tougher SEC schedule, a longer playoff, you know, more competitive football, I think that benefits the best program, which right now I believe Georgia to be. And I certainly think it makes it, in the long run, more entertaining for fans as well.
Oh, I think so. I think now me as a fan, you know, is very entertaining. But me as a player, we love playing the big games. I mean, my senior year in 2002, we love opening the season with Clemson. So those games, you know, get the guys up. Yes, we can go and beat up on some of these lesser opponents, but those guys relish the moment of playing these big games, because they know all eyes is going to be on them. It's going to be primetime game. And that's why you come to Georgia, and Georgia go out and get those type of players. So I think the players relish having that type of opponent on the schedule, going into those environments. And Kirby did speak about that his players and his team in the past love playing home games because they love playing away games, because it's them versus everyone else. It's 100,000 fans in there, and there we are in enemy territory, and we love that. So he talked about those type of environment that the Georgia Bulldogs love going to play. So I'm excited for college football next year with the longer seasons and with the 12 teams playoff.
Turning our attention to spring practice here for a moment, I would say that if you're listening to, like, the rumor mill and stuff like that, one of the most buzzed about players around the program thus far has been Colby Young, the wide receiver transfer from Miami. This is true, even though he's dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury, and I think was even seen, you know, perhaps not being a full go when a lot of the media were out there on, I believe it was Tuesday. But nonetheless, there's still all these chatter about, oh, what he did on Saturday, what he might have done here, what he might have done there. What do you make of the tall receiver Young, who's, you know, almost certainly a red zone option and kind of an interesting, you know, sort of body type for Georgia to have in this receiver room? What do you make of him generating so much buzz right now, Terrence?
Well, I spoke to his receiver coach down in Miami right when he transferred here to Georgia, and he had a lot of great things to say about the young man, and he was sad to see him leave. So I'm excited to see what he could do. I've also heard about his size, his ability. You've seen the stats floating around social media about his catch radius and his competitive catch rate. So I'm going to get opportunity to see him today. I'm going to head down to the clinic today and get down there early enough to sit in on the meetings and get opportunity to meet the young man and watch him up close. And I have a educated opinion on him from my opinion after today, and I hope to get to talk about it next week.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things over the course of years that we've sometimes seen Georgia have issues with is sometimes like red zone touchdown percentage. You know, Georgia's always seemingly scoring a lot of points, and you don't want to nitpick too much, but, you know, sometimes converting those red zone trips into touchdowns have been a little bit of an issue for the program at times in the past. And, you know, I'm not a football expert the way that you are, but it's easy to imagine, well, if you've got a guy that can just go get the football, then kind of moss dudes by just jumping over them or just using his body to get above them, all of a sudden in the red zone, Terrence, it seems like that could be the place where a guy like Young has the greatest value, because having a large catch radius and the ability to just go out and, you know, contest and just sort of snatch it away from people in a short space like that red zone area, that seems like you'd have tremendous value right there.
It does. It does. And another thing that it's going to do is, are you going to be able to leave one of your corners out on an island by itself? Or are you going to commit two guys to kind of apex the run game plus the passing game? So that also leaves open running lanes for Etienne and Robinson, who's we hearing a lot of buzz about, this 240-pound running back there. So it opens up the run game and pass game. So if you commit too many people in the box, his catch rate has been 80-20. It's 80% him catching it, 20% it being incomplete. So it just opens up a lot of things, and we don't have Brock anymore. So we need another guy that defense is going to have to focus on in the passing game in the red zone. So his ability to be 6'5 and 215 pounds is going to help us in the run game and passing game.
Let me squeeze in two more quick things before we let you go, and I think you're making a really good point right there. Thing number one is this. You know, I ask you about Colby Young. You today are going to get a chance to see some Georgia practice and hang around some of those Georgia wide receivers. Who else are you interested in right now? Some of these guys you already know really well. So perhaps of some of the guys you don't know quite as well, who is it that you're interested in seeing and learning more about and perhaps kind of seeing how they go about putting in their work at practice?
Yeah, I'm excited to see Anthony Evans and see how his second spring practice, see how he's progressed from a freshman now to being a legit sophomore now. I'm ready to see Sakobi. I've seen Sakobi for a long time at Cass and on the 707 circuit. I'm just ready to see what abilities he's going to be able to bring to the table in a Georgia uniform. Yeah, I'm just ready to see who's the leader of the team. I've always preached that Marcus was the leader of that receiving core, and I'm ready to see if Dominique is taking shape. I'm ready to see Arian, and I've been reading that his confidence right now is sky high. I think he lost some confidence last year, and this is going to be a big year for him. It's going to definitely be a big year. I've been preaching about him for some time now, and it's time to stop, you know, talking about it and for him to put it together. And I'm very confident that he is. So I'm just looking at the whole group as a whole and see how, with the loss of Brian McClendon now and having Coach Coley back, see how that group is adapting to his coaching style and then be Matt coaching style.
Last thing, I know you and your brother and a lot of your colleagues in the coaching industry have been going to this coaching clinic at Georgia for a long time. I believe this year, Jamie Chadwell, the Liberty coach, is going to be there. Willie Fritz, who's the new Houston coach, he's going to be there, I believe. How valuable do you think this is for the high school community to have an experience like this where, you know, Georgia just doesn't just impart its own wisdom, but you bring in a guy like Chadwell who runs, as Kirby, I believe, talked about this week, a little bit of a specific offense that probably mirrors what a lot of these high school teams want to do. And, you know, Fritz is just one of these interesting guys that's, you know, found a way to win sometimes with lesser talent at a couple of different stops, along the way. How valuable do you think this is for the high school football community to have a coaching clinic like this that Georgia seems committed to putting on each year?
It's very, very. I think the high school coaches get opportunity to just to see how things are done on the college level. If you didn't play on that level, and just go and if you go and just get one tip, or you bring home one thing that you can implement into your program, it's a win. So just being able to hear different speakers speak about how they do things, and then you just be around other coaches and networking and being able to just talk ball amongst the high school coaches. And I think that's the biggest thing. You get to talk ball and see people that you normally don't see, make new friends and network, and just, you know, talk ball throughout these high school coaches. And I just think if you able to take one thing away from a coach, and maybe it's take one thing away from five coaches, it's going to make your program better.
Well, speaking of talking ball, you love doing that each and every day, and you love teaching ball there as well. And it's the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy. As you've been telling us, the bubble work this year that you're doing during this winter time of year is also including defensive backs, quarterbacks. You got a lot of folks out there, you know, kind of working around the wide receiver position too. The quarterbacks who throw it to them, DBs who cover them. And for people who want more of the work that you're doing each and every day, how can they get in touch with the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy?
You can find me on all social media platforms at Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy.
Terrence, I appreciate your time. I love your insight on Georgia football. We'll look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Terrence's such a sharp guy, man. I love his insight. And listen, this guy's going to be around Georgia football practice here today and around these wide receivers absorbing that information. This is a guy who gets as close to it as you possibly can. That's when we love having him on the program here today. And yeah, you better believe next week we'll be trying to dig some of that out of Terrence about what it was he got a chance to see on all of that. We will look forward to doing that for sure. For now, though, let's go cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Let's get you excited. But everything that Royal Caribbean's got going on here over the course of 2024. In fact, one of the things I've been loving doing, I'll give you an update one more here quickly on the Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge here in just a few minutes. But and everybody who has written in to me about being a part of the bracket, I've written them back. Now, I did have one person say, but yeah, I didn't get a message from you. So I told you this is a little bit haphazard. I'm not the most organized person in the world, but I believe everyone other than maybe one person has gotten a response back from me. We've kind of gone back and forth a little bit. And I was talking to one of our folks who was like, hey, I believe it's Earl Weiss, who's going to be on Wonder of the Seas coming up. Earl's a big, you know, Georgia fan and going to be on Wonder of the Seas. Was kind enough to tell me about that. First of all, I love that when people think about me, they sort of think about Georgia football and they think about Royal Caribbean cruises. I love the fact that's the way people think about me. That's a good thing in my mind because those are two things I enjoy very much. And I've been on Wonder of the Seas before. That's one of those Oasis class ships. That's why I was so happy about our Dog Nation cruise this year being on an Oasis class ship, because I've been on two other Oasis class ships in the past. I've got a Lure of the Seas coming up here this year, or I should say in just a few weeks, and I'm so excited about so many of our Dog Nation folks who have been on our cruise getting a chance to experience an Oasis class ship for the very first time. And of course, we're going to Perfect Day Coco Cay, which you see right there. I mean, what an unbelievably beautiful thing that's going to be. And for the people who get a chance to experience that, I can't wait to show that to them. Let them know what that's all about. How about those over-the-water cabanas right there on Perfect Day Coco Cay? It's like being Bora Bora or something like that. Just amazing. And you got Hideaway Beach going there. You see the Thrill Water Park there and the really fun wave pool. Largest wave pool in the Bahamas, too, by the way. So you got some unbelievably fun stuff going on there for the kids, for the family, everything. So it's time for you to be thinking about a great Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. If you can't be on our Dog Nation cruise, you need the next best thing. And Jessica Slater is a great travel agent to help you out with that. Give her a call, 770-718-9147. 770-718-9147. You can email her as well at jslaterdreamvacations.com. You're seeing all the images there from Hideaway Beach. You want to be a part of this. It's like a Vegas-style pool party or something like that. Just an unbelievable experience. DJ right there in the pool. Got a swim-up bar there. It's a great experience. So be a part of that. Jessica can help you. Jslater at dreamvacations.com. You can also call her, 770-718-9147. Royal Caribbean believes great Royal Caribbean cruise vacation made even better when a terrific travel agent helps you plan it. And that is certainly what Jessica is. All right, so let's talk more broadly about the SEC schedule for a moment. As I said before, I think this is good news for Georgia. I think it's potentially problematic for the SEC because I don't believe the SEC has any idea how to put something in place permanently that everybody agrees with. And I think that's failed leadership. I do. I think they've brought in Texas and Oklahoma, and I don't think they exactly know how to use them. They haven't made as much money as they could, and they're trading tradition right now essentially for nothing. And I think that's a real issue here. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But as far as the schedule overall, I'm curious about the winners and losers beyond what I think the Georgia is. If you're Georgia, you got to like your schedule. A, in terms of the marquee home games, that's big business, right? Turnstiles really spinning for Bama and Texas and maybe Ole Miss as well. Also, your road games. And there are two things that matter about SEC road games right now. It's the likelihood of winning them and how far you have to travel. And Georgia plays at Auburn, at Mississippi State, at Tennessee. Not only based on recent years are those games that are Georgia's likely to win, They're also relatively short trips. And here's the thing to consider. Every sports league in America considers proximity of travel for away games. Major League Baseball doesn't play as imbalanced a schedule as it used to, but you still play your division teams more than anybody else. The NFL, half your games are against your division because it's the closest travel for you. Even the professional leagues, where obviously money is seemingly no object to any, you know, no sort of, you know, barrier to anything, they still consider proximity of travel. And so proximity of travel also matters in the SEC too. And not only does Georgia have three, you know, winnable true road games in 2025, it's also got, you know, relatively easy travel, which I think matters. Now, because you're keeping the exact same schedule in place, teams that have relatively easy schedules in 2024 are going to get the same thing in place for them in 2025 there as well. For instance, Missouri. I think Missouri is one of the real winners here in all this. They get a home game against Alabama. They're also playing Mississippi State, South Carolina, Texas A&M. Their road games are at Arkansas. That's obviously winnable. At Auburn, we'll see how good Auburn happens to be. Oklahoma could be tough. And at Vanderbilt. You don't get much easier to schedule than that if you're Missouri. For 2 years in a row, they probably are looking at a pretty favorable schedule. On the flip side, if you're Florida, I mean, you're just miserable right now. You know, you've probably got one of the toughest schedules anybody's ever played here this year. And your road games for 2025 are at Kentucky, at LSU, at Ole Miss, at Texas A&M. Based on what we think about Florida right now, they're going to be a point spread underdog in all those games. But also, as I told you, proximity of travel also matters. Long trip to Lexington, long trip to Baton Rouge, long trip to Oxford, that's essentially Memphis, long trip to College Station. And by the way, Texas A&M and Florida have played so much. It's crazy how many times they've played here in the SEC, and obviously Georgia still hasn't gone to Texas A&M. So, I mean, when you start looking deeper in this, you see some winners and losers beyond just the situation here with Georgia. And the teams that have the easy schedule this year, by perception anyway, they've got that for 2025 there as well. And the opposite is also true for teams like Florida, who have a very, very tough slate. Of course, we cry no tears for them. Now, the other interesting note here is the notion that one of the reasons why the SEC is kind of slow going a permanent schedule is because of the possibility, anyway, that there could be more conference expansion on the way at some point in time. I've got a little bit of a runny nose today, y'all. I'm sorry. Conference expansion on the way at some point in time. That's potentially coming up here. And we know that Clemson's suing the ACC. We know that Florida State's suing the ACC. Those two sort of Southern power programs, they want out of the ACC. Now, legally, can they get out? Honestly, I don't know. But it's also not obvious if they can that both or either of those schools would be destinations for the SEC. In fact, I believe 24/7 Sports has reported that Florida State's most likely destination might be the Big Ten. So in the Big Ten's attempt to become a fully national league, you're also potentially allowing them to sort of encroach on your southern territory. If they bring in a Florida State or perhaps a Virginia, that's been talked about. The SEC probably targets North Carolina, the University of North Carolina, more than anything else. So there is a chance there could be some, you know, further SEC expansion on the way, and maybe that's in place by 2026. It's clearly one of those things you'll keep your eye on. NCAA tournament does begin today. I'll remind you one more time, as I'm speaking to you here, it's about, you know, 11 minutes prior to 11 o'clock here Eastern time where I'm sitting in the Atlanta area. If you still want one more shot to get your bracket in, now these things lock at noon, so if you want one more shot to get your bracket in, if you'll send me an email right now, if you're watching live, I will try to get the bracket back to you and let you make your picks and get into our contest prior to the 12 p.m. lock on all this. So I'll be standing by right there after the show. You send it to me, I'll shoot it back to you, and you can get your picks in if you want to. We've got a lot of people who've submitted picks here thus far. But if you want to send me your name, your email, your mailing address, your phone number to brandon.adams@dognation.com, I'll make a note of you in case you win, and then I'll shoot you back over the bracket to fill out, and you can be a part of our contest. One more quick shot to be able to do that. A couple of more notes I wanted to give to you here real quick. First of all, there's this. Deion Sanders, very interesting admission yesterday. So I guess there was a story, I guess this is from The Athletic, but the fact that Deion reportedly, and now I guess it's confirmed, has not taken an off-campus recruiting visit since becoming Colorado coach, that he hasn't visited a school, he hasn't visited a family. And he spoke this week about why that was, essentially confirming that he doesn't take these visits and basically saying he's too famous to do that, that if he goes to a school and doesn't visit another school, he'll be in trouble for that. That the other school is going to complain because Deion's so famous and too many people will be mad that Deion didn't visit their school. And my question to Deion is, do you think you're the only coach that has to be somewhat political about which schools you do and don't visit? That's why Georgia coaches have the helicopters out. That's why they're barnstorming all over the place. And they're taking pictures of Georgia coaches on the road. This is what coaches have been doing for time immemorial. You think they're the only coach that has some pressure to visit as many schools as possible? The idea that you're too famous, so therefore you don't do it at all? I'd be pretty troubled by this if I was a Colorado fan. Now, Deion fans will support Deion no matter what. But if I'm a Colorado fan, someone who liked the Buffaloes before Deion got there, I find this to be, I would say, pretty problematic. And the idea that he doesn't go to the families of recruits because he says families want to see his house. I'm sure a lot of people do want to see Deion's house. But also the ability to sort of forge an authentic relationship on someone else's own terms at their own kitchen table, that's also a big part of what coaching is. And if Deion doesn't want to do that kind of stuff, then I don't know how long Deion wants to coach. And that's just fact of the matter there on that. Interesting stuff coming out of Columbus here on a couple of notes. First of all, we talked yesterday about the rumor as it related to Caleb Downs. We know that Caden Proctor, the offensive lineman who left Alabama, went to Iowa and then turned right back around and came back to Alabama. That sort of set off a firestorm of rumors that other Bama transfers might consider doing the same thing, which if you're Caden Proctor, kind of make you feel bad, right? It's like you make the announcement to come back to Bama and all anybody's doing is saying, oh, I wonder if Caleb Downs will do the same thing. Well, yesterday we got a very interesting message on social media from the official NIL collective for Ohio State that says, our student-athlete partner Caleb Downs is locked in, and he's ready for a big year, basically saying Caleb Downs is not transferring. So we're in an interesting age now in which NIL collectives are essentially refuting rumors that are out there, but the Downs rumor was a big one on Tuesday night, and now the Ohio State collective is refuting that. So I guess that's good news for the Buckeyes. However, the flip side of this, not quite as good news as it relates to their ongoing pursuit of a running backs coach. Obviously, their guy left to go be Michigan running backs coach. That was a high-profile move. And you know, who knows what he's taking with him in the middle of spring practice and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, Michigan, it's not below their standard to use extra information to win games if they can possibly get it. But the point is, they are now looking for a running backs coach. Yesterday, they got a little bit of a high-profile rejection from DeMarco Murray, the running backs coach at Oklahoma, who's obviously an Oklahoma grad. So Ohio State somewhat publicly turned down for their coaching opening yesterday by DeMarco Murray, perhaps upending what has been kind of an off-season of momentum, and Ohio State's developed all kinds of chatter. But at least as of right now, having a little bit of trouble finding a running backs coach, an interesting development just given the overall running back talent that the Buckeyes currently have on the roster for the upcoming season. It will make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. I almost never get any kind of like a cold or, you know, I don't have any allergies ever. I've had one sick day in 8 years, but I definitely got a little bit of a nasal thing going on today, so I'm sure that's annoying. I apologize for that, to be sure. But I do have a couple of golden shoes to give you on the way out the door here. Starting with this, I mentioned we've been kind of doing our golden shoe bracket contest. I've heard from so many of you, and you've shared kind messages and interesting things, including Meredith, who wrote me and said about picking out the bracket. She says, hi, Brandon. I heard on SiriusXM yesterday that the odds of correctly filling out the NCAA tournament bracket, meaning getting all the picks right, is 9.27 quintillion to one. She says, because I couldn't imagine such a number, I looked it up. And according to Google, a quintillion is described as a million, million, millions. Basically, it's a billion, billions. So there you go. And it's 9.277 quintillion to one, your chances of picking out a perfect bracket. So all of a sudden now, thanks to Meredith, I don't feel quite so bad about getting some new picks wrong. So good stuff to Meredith. We'll give her a golden shoe for that. And also yesterday, we talked about Jim Harbaugh's yard sale and how I would love to see a yard sale at his house. And I used to love flea markets. I wonder if there were still flea markets out there. Well, Kenya Fouch wrote in to say there are definitely still flea markets all over the place, which I think is good news. Now, I made this clear on our cooldown yesterday. I want flea markets and I want antique malls. Same piece of junk at an antique mall is twice as expensive as it is a flea market. So give me the flea market, not the antique mall. But as Kenya points out, glad to know there are still flea markets out there. And I wouldn't mind seeing one of those, because cool old stuff from somebody's house, I still sort of think it's kind of interesting, especially if it's sort of a weird collectible or something like that. So good stuff from Kenya. We appreciate that. We'll give him a golden shoe there as well. Lousy Stinking Gators, speaking of old stuff, their championship trophy is starting to seem old and dusty because it's been a long time since they've won anything. In fact, it's been 1,230 days since they've beaten Georgia. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see all of you back here tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.